Seasons change. Why not your tech? Upgrade now during the Dell Technologies Summer Sale event and save on select PCs, like the XPS 16, powered by Intel Core processors. You'll be able to bring your most intensive projects to life with built-in AI, minimalistic design, immersive visuals, and cinematic audio. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to exceptional tech and electronics, plus free shipping on everything. Amazing prices await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Money Making Conversations. It's the show that shares the secrets of success experienced firsthand by marketing and branding expert Rashawn McDonald. I will know. He's given me advice on many occasions, and in case you didn't notice, I'm not broke. You know he'll be interviewing celebrity CEOs, entrepreneurs, and industry decision makers. It's what he likes to do. It's what he likes to share. Now it's time to hear from my man, Rashawn McDonald. Money Making Conversations.
Here. Absolutely. It's a Monday. Well, it could be Tuesday, could be Wednesday. Depends on when you're hearing my podcast or hearing my radio show in syndication. I'm here delivering information. I'm your host, Rashawn McDonald, and you're listening to Money Making Conversation. Each Money Making Conversation radio talk show or podcast is about entrepreneurship and entertainment. I provide the consumer and business owner access to celebrities, CEOs, entrepreneurs, and industry decision makers. My goal is to share advice that I've been given to me, advice that I've given to people over the years. A lot of people have big dreams. They don't have plans associated with those dreams. My show is to try to break that down that wall to say you cannot achieve a dream without achieving a plan. And a plan has to be written. It cannot be hoped upon. It can be prayed upon. But that prayer has to turn into work. A lot of people tend to put a lot of weight on that prayer. They say they jump out there. A leap of faith. I've heard those statements before. Right place, right time, you know. It was my moment. Okay, where is it written down, though? You got to write that all down. Got to write all those moments down. Oh, guess what? It's not going to happen the way you want it to happen. Believe me, because of the fact that I've been in that chair where I've just been hoping. I call that the lotto experience. You just sit around and you just be hoping that it's going to happen. I'm playing the lotto. It's my time. It's my journey. It's my moment. Guess what? There are no guarantees. My guests in turn deliver information about career planning, motivation, financial literacy, and how they lead a balanced life. My next guest ran into this young man. First of all, we're going to go back to the L.A. days. Yeah. But then I was at a very good friend of mine, Holly Robinson, Pete and her husband. They do an autism event. And also the event, a charity race in regards to her father. And I attended. I finally showed up. I give money all the time. I finally showed up. And Holly was shocked that I showed up this year. Actually, when she hollered out my name during the event, and I said yes, she was actually stunned that I was there. But when you go out in public, you tend to meet people you hadn't seen in a long time and also realize the impact that you made in just basic conversation or just, I guess you could say, mentoring. And that's what I try to do when I meet individuals. My next guest is a celebrated celebrity, Master Barber, award-winning actor, director, producer, and screenwriter. Please welcome to Money Making Conversation, Lewis T. Powell.
Hey. How's everybody doing out there? My man, Rashawn. First, I want to say, Rashawn, you know, thank you for all that you do, the philanthropy work. You know, you've really been a pillar in the community, man, just stepping out there with graciousness and abundance, man, and sharing that wealth with everybody, man. And that's just such a blessing to have people like you circumventing like I said, for the culture. And I want to say thank you. You've been a staunch supporter of the Holly Robinson Peak Foundation, man. I've seen you give on numerous occasions, man, from your heart, and it's just a beautiful thing to see.
Well, you know, the thing about it is that there's no reason as to why I give. There's the fact that I have to give, and then I've realized that I affect so many different people. I've started foundations for other friends of mine and helped them push things in the right direction. One of my big things I'm doing right now is for HBCUs. You're a graduate of HBCU.
Howard University.
Yeah. Where I'm trying to become a media force along with Stephen A. Smith to bring brand awareness to it really kind of annoys me, the treatment of HBCUs, because it always feels like the word struggle is tied to an HBCU school. It always looked like, you know, we asking for a financial handout from the government. And it tends to really muddy down the great institutions that HBCUs are. But let's talk to us about that experience, because I'm on a lot of the HBCU stations. Mm-hmm. Schools carry my show, as well as Sirius XM 141 and 142.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to that point, it is. It's always, like you said, people always try to associate struggle with HBCUs.
Right.
But you look at institutions like Howard that's been around for over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as other established black HBCUs that don't get as much credit.
Right.
You know, I mean, struggling. I mean, when you look at some of the most prominent doctors and black lawyers and accountants and physicians, my mother's a Howard graduate. You know, she came out in 67 and she's an accountant. And when I look at her alumni being, you know, she's a Delta Sigma Theta. And it's like I look at a lot of her little events that they have. And it's like all these professional, financially well off people that have actually been sowing back into their communities and various different states all over the United States. I mean, excuse me, all over the United States. So. When you look at the struggle that people say that the HBCUs have, I think that that's just the media putting out some kind of propaganda, you know, in a way to kind of shine the light off of excellence that we've always been bringing.
Now, also, you mentioned your mom, your dad. Now, you're a master barber.
Yeah.
And your dad, he's a barber.
50 years.
Let's talk about that relationship. You know, he kind of pushed you in that direction, or it was just a natural,
It was kind of like a natural progression. You know, in the Washington, D.C. area, our barbershops have been around since 1965.
Right.
You know.
I have a younger brother. My younger brother, he has like four beauty and barber salons in the D.C., Maryland area.
So. Then I know our families probably know each other. So it's like, because it's like we had one off Upshur Street, Lamont Street and Georgia Avenue, Kennedy Street and 12th and 8th Street Northeast. So it's like when I started off in barbering, my father actually brought us. It's about 17 barbers in my family.
Wow.
Yeah, it's stretched in far and few between, man. But I started off in the shop signing shoes and nickels, dimes, and quarters, sweeping guys' backs off. You know, I was a little kid when a guy would jump off the chair and if he didn't want to tip me, man, I'd sweep you all the way till you got out the door. I would embarrass you to tip me, man. It was cool. But it was a progression where, you know, I jumped off into that space. And by the time I was about 13, I remember the first haircut I really kind of just gaffled. It was my cousin, Glenn Johnson. My father came home and he came out of this little room in the basement and looked at it, and he was like, "I didn't know you wanted to grab the tools yet. I see you need some work."
Hey, can't let the reputation get messed up.
Exactly.
Amateur night moments here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, being your you talk about your dad.
Yeah.
Being a barber, that's the core of being an entrepreneur. You know, he's taking the talents and look. As long as I got these scissors, I can make money somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that really, I remember when I left IBM and I pursued my career as a stand-up comic. I always felt that no matter what, unlike an actor, an actor has to wait on an opportunity. Yeah, as a stand-up, as long as I can tell jokes, I can get on stage and make me some money. Yeah. And it really empowered me a lot in my career, if I would say that I was an actor just waiting on the opportunity versus, hey, if you just let me on that stage.
Let
me on that stage. Give me 15 minutes. You're going to write me a check.
And
so that really, that even though you're into the entertainment, because you have that skill set, doesn't it give you a really an unbridled amount of confidence that
no matter what,
you can still exist?
Yeah, because that's one of the reasons why I created Padlock Man as long on the entrepreneurial business side.
Right.
It was one of those things where, you know, I've always worked as an independent. You know, when I worked in music, you know, I pushed a record to Billboard charts out of my living room. You know, when I was at the space of, when I my barbering business, it was like, you know, I cut numerous celebrities from 50 Cent to Outkast to Dwayne Wade. And it was like one of those things. I built my business accordingly. So each one of them worked together, unified. When I looked at Padlock, man, it was just another etching that space. You know, my first two films I sold independently, and I was like, you know what? Well, why can't I create a pilot myself? Why can't I go out and take this pilot, chop it, and why can't I figure out the distribution and finance it myself also to take that to the next level, which in return can incorporate me as an actor, as a director, and as a score, you know, for music. And then on top of that, it's like I want to be in the lane to try to create more opportunities, not just for myself, but people outside of me. And when you start creating that ecosystem as an entrepreneur, obviously you know that all of it pays dividends, backwards and forward.
It really is amazing when you talk about, you know, I always tell people when I, and even in this conversation, Mr. Powell, when I'm talking to you, and it's about understanding your opportunities. Now, how does social media, how does brand marketing play a role, and how do you get the word out? And also, you can give out your handles.
Brand marketing plays a big part. I mean, you know, in this day and time we live in, technology flows, you know. I mean, back when I first started, it was like the barbershop was the information superhighway. But now we look at Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and, you know, and all these different avenues where we actually can share our gifts with the world. And I think it's one of those things, finding your audience, finding your niche, and then building upon that niche of the people that actually support you and starting the steamroll effect to turn that over and over again to grow your audience more. Because I feel like sometimes what I look at a lot of times nowadays is people stretch themselves too thin instead of saying, you know what, if I can find a core of 1,000 people or 500 people, man, it'll support me, you know, 100%. Would I rather have 1,000 people to support me 100% or would I rather have 1,000 people only support me 10% or 5,000 people only support me 1%? You know, I'd rather find that niche audience, cater to them, keep building that steamroll effect to build my brand, build my business, and as I move along, I know one thing, relationships, network opens up wider. And then on top of that, like I said, people become more fans and you have more advocates, man, to create more substantial business. Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing about it is when you look at the business that you're in, you know, you mentioned celebrity names that you, does that help?
Most definitely.
That, because, you know, you're in an intimate relationship when you're cutting the hair. And then you're also an actor. You're also a director, you're a producer. How does that talk to us about that balance.
You know what? That's one of the things I've always kind of prided myself in, because I feel like going back to the entrepreneur, every business that you do, no matter what it is, it's a reflection of you. So, you know, I'll give you a prime example. I went up to Cut 50 one time for Bloomberg Business Week, right? And I walked in. I would always wear suits, come in with a doctor briefcase with my tools in. You know what I mean? So I walked in. I would get there about 30, 45 minutes earlier. A lot of times they thought I was 50's manager. They'd be like, oh, where does this go, Mr. Powell? And I'm like, look, I'm the barber. But at the same time, that reflection, when I first started off in the barbering business, I would always PDF my invoices to all of the companies. Because I was like, you know what? If I ever get a chance to run across them again, they'll look and say, oh, well, this guy, he's a director too. Oh, he's a writer and he's an actor. But I remember when he worked as a barber, that guy was so professional. He PDF'd his invoice. He was always on time. He was intelligent. He was articulate. You know,
setting the stage.
So when I get ready to cross that threshold in the future on any other endeavor in entertainment, especially within the celebrity space, is, you know what? Let me hear what this guy has to say. Let me take his call. Why? Because I set the stage.
Absolutely. You know, as we wrap this interview up, you know, you're not close to leaving this earth. We always have these journeys that we're trying to, what's the future? What's the future, Mr. Powell?
Man, the future.
LT Powell.
Let me tell you, the future for me is you all are going to see a Dynamite limited series on HBO from Padlock Men. I'm building a production company, an ecosystem for distribution. We're going to create an ecosystem for to incubate talent from animators to writers, directors, producers, all in-house. And on top of that, it's like I just want to build a blessing like my man Rashawn here and be able to give back to the people, man, that deserve it, man. And just to be able to try to create a synergy, man, of goodness, man, and just share love, wealth, intelligence, and health.
Well, it was great seeing you again. live in studio. Yeah. So know this, you have a home now. You got my contact information.
Yes, sir.
And so just keep us abreast of the steps.
Yeah.
Anything you're doing that's non-related to the project. Yeah. You know, like, for instance, you might want to give us that cover of Boss Man so we can put it and post it on our social media.
Because
it's part of your brand.
Yeah.
It's part of being recognized for your excellence. And again, thank you for coming on Money Making Conversation.
Oh, man. Thank you again, Rashawn. It was a pleasure being here. And everybody out there, you can catch me on my handles at Lewis T. Powell. That's on Instagram, at Lewis T. Powell Twitter, and at Lewis T. Powell on Facebook. I appreciate you.
Appreciate you, teammates. We're coming right back with more Money Making Conversations.
Hi, this is Rashawn McDonald, the host of Money Making Conversations. You say to yourself, who calls Rashawn's show? Please welcome to Money Making Conversations, Lala Anthony. We met, you know, you used to always say, Rashawn, can you give me, can we talk? Can we talk?
I always talk to you about everything, everything. And looking at you and Steve Harvey, you know, that motivated me too, because I would see all the amazing things you guys were doing and not just being on the radio. Mm-hmm. I felt like at that time and even now, you know, people want to put people in boxes.
Please welcome to Money Making Conversations, the incredible Nick Cannon.
You're truly one of my mentors and one of the people that showed me that you can be multifaceted.
You know for a fact now that you're about to capture an audience that's going to have a spending power for at least another 20 years.
To me, it's like my happiness is invaluable. Money doesn't make you happy, but happy makes you money.
Money Making Conversations continues online at www.moneymakingconversations.com.
Hi, Rashawn McDonald, host of Money Making Conversations. Hi, again, this is Rashawn McDonald. Just getting my voice tone, getting it right, because I got one of my favorite guests on the show. It's about food. So everybody know I get a little extra excited when I talk to people about food. So I got to calm down. I got to calm down, because each Money Making Conversation radio talk show or podcast is about entrepreneurship and entertainment. I provide the consumer and business owner access to celebrities, CEOs, entrepreneurs, and industry decision makers. They, in turn, my guests deliver information about career planning, motivation, financial literacy, and how they lead a balanced life. Their motivation. My guests have really been tuning in to delivering these messages, this message on a regular basis. And I'm really excited about my next guest. He's an owner, executive chef, that means food, of several very popular restaurants. He was born and raised in St. Petersburg, Florida, and attended college at the University of Florida. That means he's a Gator? That means he's a Gator? Okay, all right. SEC? Okay, cool. After graduating with a dual degree in business administration and sports management, he decided to enroll in culinary school. Okay, now that's a switch now. Please welcome, he's here to tell his story and all the success he's had over the years since he's graduated with that culinary degree. Please welcome to Money Making Conversation, Eduardo Jordan.
Thank you for having me.
My man.
How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Yes, where are you at right now? Where are you calling from right now?
I'm in Seattle, Washington. I'm home before I'm headed to work.
Seattle, yeah. Washington. Now, I've been to Seattle a couple of times. I used to do stand-up comedy. I went up there way back in the day, did some jokes up there. I stopped in there when I was going to Vancouver for a cruise.
Okay.
So, but I'm going to tell you something. Let's talk a little bit about you before we get to this menu that really – and I'm already told – I'm going to just tell you this, Eduardo. You're going to see me before the year out, brother.
Heard that.
You're going to see me before the year out. I'm going to let everybody know. You're going to find out why I'm going to go up there with my wife. She's already signed off. She's going to be coming up there with us. So we got to get a day. Do you have a chef table at your restaurants?
And we will make a table for you.
There
don't
you
worry
go.
About that.
There you go. Okay, cool. Let's talk about the beginning, because I talked about the degrees in business administration. And that still helps you out now, because you're owner, you're an entrepreneur. So that degree in the business administration does help you out. Then you went into sports management. How did the whole culinary part of your life start to rise to the top?
Well, you know, I honestly started with food at the age of 9. You know, food has always been an intimate part of my experience growing up. You know, when I was 9 years old, my mom put me in the kitchen because she noticed that I had an interest for food, because I was always asking my grandmother questions. My grandmother's a Southerner. She's originally from Cairo, Georgia. And, you know, her specialty was cooking big old lavish meals for the family and friends to come over and hang out at her house. mm-hmm. You know, for family reunions, after church, you mm-hmm. know, all of the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about grandma. And so, you know, I took an interest into food then and there, and I guess that kind of, you know, played a role in my life later on when I was decided on the real direction that I wanted to go in on my true passion. So it was all about like that foundation with mom and grandmother of like hospitality and food. Mom showing me around the kitchen, my mom giving me my first cookbook at probably like the age of 10 or 11. I don't remember the exact time period.
The question that will pop out is that you said since 9, why didn't you immediately go into that direction? Why did you go to?
Oh man. You know, it was kind of like, you know, the reality is, you know, my mom and my dad wanted me to go to college. I
right.
was the first person in my family to go to college.
Right.
And we're talking about extended family too. And so their mission was to make sure that I, you know, get an education, also get a degree that is going to send me in the path that they thought and believed is going to be great for me, you know, become a right. doctor, become a lawyer, become a sports agent or something that dictated high paying, well-established job with benefits, et cetera. So their mission was just point me in the right direction, and cooking was definitely not the direction they assumed that I should be going in.
Because let's going to be real. You know, you got a lot of cooks out there, but don't have a lot of chefs of color out there.
Color, exactly. And the reality is, you know, the culinary world is a very hard world. I mean, you're working, you know, 13, 14 hours a day, not getting paid the highest wages. And, you know, dollar for dollar, hour per hour, you're definitely working way more than most doctors and most lawyers for, you know, far less. So they saw, you know, me going to college as a better direction for me. And they definitely encouraged me, like, you know, follow my dreams and everything, like cook, enjoy it. Go become a doctor, and then one day you can own your own restaurant while you're a doctor,
right?
Kind of thing.
Okay, now, so we're in Florida, having a good time. That's big football mm-hmm. powerhouse, basketball powerhouse.
Oh, yes, sir.
So then the cooking really is what you want to do. You've satisfied their expectation, their dreams. I always tell people, you can't repo a degree. So I love it. I
Correct.
Love the fact my degree is in mathematics. They can't come in and go, you know something? That degree off the wall, we're gonna take that degree off the wall. We're gonna take it away from. No, you can't do that. Can't do it. Once that degree hits that wall and you say I'm out, we good. We good.
Yeah.
I don't care what that college loan is. We good. We good. And so the beauty of what you're at right now is that I love this conversation because it talks about defining your path. It talks about
Correct.
Understanding that I can accomplish many things, but are those the things that I really want to do? And so mm-hmm. cooking is what you really wanted to do. And so here's the thing that we want to talk about, because climbing the ladder to be a chef, humbleness, mm-hmm. low pay, long hours, again, humbleness, you know,
yeah.
sometimes you're being bullied because people
yeah.
have power over you and you have to be
totally.
Able to navigate that. And then you're a person of color. So there's a lot of
Correct.
Questions. Then you stigmatize.
There's a lot of barriers.
Yeah, you stigmatize, you know, what, especially if you want to go outside of what they think you can do. You know
Correct.
What I'm saying? So just talk about that journey a little bit there, Eduardo.
Yeah, I mean, it was a hard, very strenuous, humbling journey. You
mm-hmm.
know, I ended up going to culinary school after graduating from the University of Florida. So I was a little bit older than most people in culinary school.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was like 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking like an elder compared to the 16 and 17-year-olds. But I was extremely focused. And I realized, like, in culinary school, that was a reality check, you know. It was we probably had 10% of people of color there,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and out of that 10%, probably 5% graduated.
Right.
Of mm-hmm. that 5% that graduated, 2% ended up finding a decent job.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And out of that 2%, you got me, the 1% that is still remaining that I know of.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so that was pretty much my journey and my path, because as I ended up going, you know, to get. You know, distinguished jobs at distinguished locations. I ended up becoming an intern or apprenticeship at the French Laundry in Napa Valley. You know, one of the most prestigious restaurants in the world,
right?
I should say, but definitely in this country. You know, that was the stepping stone to my career. But at that same time, I realized that, you know, I was 2% again of that organization. You know, it wasn't many people of color there,
right?
And as I progressed in my career, you know. I had to humble myself more because I was in the fine dining world. And as you move up in that ladder of cuisine, the style of cuisine, you know, the level of restaurant, you realize that that percentage trickles down more and more with people of color, women, minorities, et cetera. And the reality check was that, you know, it was a white chef's world for me.
Absolutely.
I was running in.
And that's an honest statement to talk about, you know, not because, because of the fact that the reality is though, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors. And that's
correct.
Walk when you go, you see food being brought out, and then people complain, and sometimes that's when for some reason, chefs always come to my table. You know, I guess because I just love food. They go, how's everything going? So you like, is your meal good? I go, yeah, it's fine. And I will send food back now. If I don't like it, I'll tell, hey, dude, I'm sorry. This is not working for me today.
You're paying for it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Now, let's talk about, because I wanted to get that part of the story out, that part of the journey out, because I want to talk about the uniqueness of your success story. And it continues to grow. Explain to everybody the James Beard Award.
Oh, man. So, you know, think about the Emmys and the Oscars. And the James Beard is just as equal for the culinary world as those prestigious awards. The foundation was started, you know, to recognize the culinary arts world, chefs, restaurateurs, industry movers and shakers by distinguishing them with once a year honoring the best of the best. And, you know, I can say I'm fairly blessed with the fact
come on
that.
Now, come on now. Talk to us, Eduardo. Tell us what you got, man. I set you up, man.
Fairly blessed with two distinguished awards in one year. Which is unheard of, you know, for one minority to achieve that award in one year, it's a feat on its own. But to achieve two recognitions for best chef Northwest and best new restaurant in the country, James, for June Baby, it was just mind blowing. It was out of the universe. It was unheard of. You know, the first time that ever has happened.
Right.
You know, I have a lot of firsts in my career, and I strive and pride myself on being first. I was the first black chef ever to grace the cover of Food & Wine magazine as Best New Chef in 2016. You know, that's pretty huge. You think about at least some of the culinary dignitaries that have walked around here. You got Marcus Samuelson, Patrick Clark. You know, you got some very distinguished black chefs that have done great things that have not ever made it to that cover of that magazine. And that was a big honor. And that was a big piece deal. In the start of people recognizing and realizing the talent that I had.
I printed out this menu. I came in here to let you know I love what you do. Keep doing
Thank
what
you.
You're doing. You will see me this year. Samantha, they're going to reach out to you. It's going to be on the weekend. I'm going to come up there. We're going to have a good time. We're going to laugh, man, and we're going to eat, and we're going to tell stories, and I'm going to support your brand. And congratulations for breaking that glass ceiling, and I'm going to keep supporting you, man. And you got something going on that's special, and you are very special. Thank you for doing my show, Money Making Conversations. Hi, this is Rushon McDonald, the host of Money Making Conversations. You say to yourself, who calls Rushon's show? Please welcome to Money Making Conversations, Lala Anthony. We met... You know, you used to always say, Rushon, can we talk?
I always talk to you about everything. And looking at you and Steve Harvey, you know, that motivated me too, because I would see all the amazing things you guys were doing and not just being on the radio. I felt like at that time and even now, you know, people want to put people in boxes.
Please welcome to Money Making Conversations, the incredible Nick Cannon.
You're truly one of my mentors and one of the people that showed me that you can be multifaceted.
You know for a fact now that you're about to capture an audience that's going to have a spending power for at least another 20 years.
To me, it's like my happiness is invaluable. Money doesn't make you happy, but happy makes you money.
Money Making Conversations continues online at www.moneymakingconversations.com. Money Making Conversations continues online at www.moneymakingconversations.com and follow Money Making Conversations on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
My next guest has landed her on her work. Wow. You know, she is a first-timer on Money Making Conversations. Her work has landed her on many lists, including being named one of the 2017 Glamour Magazine Women of the Year, the hashtag Woke 100 by Essence Magazine, and Christian as one of the female faces of the new civil rights movement by Black Entertainment Television, BET, in addition to appearances and features in media outlets including NBC, ABC, CBS, MSNBC, Vogue, New York Magazine, Forbes, ESPN, TV One, The Huffington Post, News One, and TheGrio.com, among others. Please welcome to Money Making Conversations the Director of National Partnerships for Airbnb, Janae Ingram.
Hi, how are you?
Did I say a lot about you there, Ms. Ingram?
You did. And sometimes I still, when I hear that, I'm like, really? I did that? Okay.
You know, you really. I have a general tendency just to, I felt when I was reading your bio that you're a grinder. In other words, you know, you accomplish tasks. You're not a person that sits back and look at your past efforts because you're always moving forward. And in general, because of that, you tend to not realize the greatness of the path that you or the journey that you created. It's pretty impressive, my friend.
Well, thank you. And I think you're right about that. It is keeping my nose down to the grindstone and just continuing to push forward and finding new ways to be impactful. So hearing, you know, being reminded of the path that I've created is always, it's always inspiring, even for myself. And just, you know, says a lot about the journey when you're committed to something and committed to doing good.
You know, it's really interesting when I hear your voice, because I hear a humble person. I hear a humble person that I'm communicating with. And it's almost, when I hear that humbleness, it almost, does it surprise you that you know, I always go back to college, and I was just in college, okay? I was trying to get an education, trying to get to the next party, trying to get past that grade, just trying to get there. And then I look 20 years, 30 years later, I go, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. That's a lot going on in your life, Rashawn. What stands out the most in your career so far? Because it's not stopping. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many things and moments. I think if I had to say, my work right now is really impressive, and not to diminish it, but I do think the high point for me and something that I'm still really, really proud of is planning the Women's March. And that for me was something that I didn't go into it envisioning that I would be making history, or envisioning that the turnout would be what it was. I kind of went in because I was passionate about creating space for people, to raise their grievances. And that was, you know, I was committed to the cause of justice and ensuring that, you know, again, all of the people who were saying that they were going to come were going to come to Washington, D.C. and have an opportunity to have their collective voices heard. And it was something where if I would have known what I was doing when I was asked, like, will you come help with this? I probably would have said no, because I would have been afraid.
Right.
I would have been afraid that I was going to fail. I would have been afraid of all of the many things that could have gone wrong.
The logistics was just overwhelming.
It is overwhelming. And I don't think people really understand the complexities that are involved. And maybe they do, because, you know, I had, prior to that march, I had planned the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. Mm-hmm. And I was younger. I was a newer face in D.C. I mean, people knew me, but, I had worked for Reverend Sharpton. And people just saw me as someone who worked for Reverend Sharpton and
right.
Never understood maybe the skills and talents that I had. And so I remember planning the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and some of the seniors and elders saying to me, you know, listen, baby girl, hand me this march, because I don't know that you you know, it's a lot, and it's probably too much for you to handle.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I mean, you know, I was clear that, first of all, Reverend Sharpton had entrusted me with with planning that march and leading that effort. And, it, you know, I didn't want to disappoint him. So I said, no, we got it. And it made a lot of people sort of stand up and look at me and say, oh, okay, she does, she can do this. But never once in planning that 50th anniversary of the March on Washington did anyone ever say to me, do you have a permit? Like, do you know what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the elder saying, you know, this is a lot and you probably need some help. Whereas with the march, the Women's March, us having a permit became, you know, it became front page news of like the Women's March is happening, but they don't even have a permit.
Right.
And folks don't understand like what the permitting process is. I had done it a lot. And so for me, it was like, okay, I know this process and I know what we're going to have to go through and I know what it takes to get a permit, but it became sort of a spectacle. And I think, overcoming all of the naysayers, people who said the Women's March is not going to happen because they don't have a permit. The Women's March, you know, is, it's going to flop. It's, you know, people won't show up. All of the things that the naysayers were saying.
But that does come across, you know, the whole, you know, I go all the way back to the Million Man March, you know, you know, that was the ultimate naysayer that why would they come and what was the general purpose? And so, but it is, you know, all you do, you put the tools in place. That's what you did. And then they came. Let's walk it through the process of, you know, because, you know, you kind of get aware about it, the buses that are coming, the hotels that are being booked up, the airlines that are going to have difficulty coming in or being booked. You know, you start getting the little signs, you know, that, okay, something's happening here. And so when did that tingle really run up your back going, my God, it's happening. It's really, really happening.
I mean, I think it sort of happened along the way. So when we planned the Women's March collectively, you know, there were a lot of moving pieces and but I really owned the piece that was what people showed up and experienced specifically in DC and then with touch points and connections with all of the marches across the country. And so like, you know, helping folks with logistics in different parts of the country. But it happened, we started planning 2 months before the march happened.
Right.
And in those 2 months, you also had four holidays. You had Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's Eve, and King Day.
Right.
And so a lot of people were taking off, enjoying vacations. And to be honest, I actually, you know, I did take a vacation, even in the midst of all of the march planning. And that was because of the experience that I had had doing
Absolutely.
Yeah, but a lot of it was, you know, a lot of it was ongoing. So when I signed on, it was like, okay, 100,000 people are going to show up to this march.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really through a Facebook post. So Facebook posts, I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, you say you're going to come, but are you really going to come?
You know,
and then as we started to get bus numbers and as we started to get, you know, flight numbers, I think it really didn't hit me until maybe the week of the march, quite frankly.
Let's talk about your national partnership. Let's go, because I don't want to get off the phone without explaining exactly. You went into detail of different organizations. Are you in a position where people reach out to you or you reach out to them to create these partnerships? How exactly does that work for Airbnb?
Generally, it is people reaching out to us. I mean, I think that there are opportunities where I will reach out to, you know, an organization or a leader and say, we want to engage you for a specific thing. But generally, it is lots of organizations reaching out to me and to us as a company and wanting to work with us. And I think we are a brand that is, I would say there are a lot of people who know about us. Generally, people are interested because it's, you know, it's a younger brand. The company was founded in 2008, so we're just barely 11 years old. But our name has become sort of a noun in terms of, like, when you're sharing your house, it's like, oh, I'm going to Airbnb. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm staying at an Airbnb. And even if it's not legitimately an Airbnb, I think that we have become sort of the Kleenex, if you will, the Kleenex version of home sharing. And that's a phenomenal thing to have a company so young that's able to become part of the lexicon that is, you know, synonymous with home sharing. So it's really amazing to have that. And I think it creates an appetite for people to say, we want to work with you. We want to find out more about what you're doing. And then at the same time, I think that there are things that people don't necessarily understand about our business.
Right.
And so, for example, we have experiences, which you mentioned, are the local activities that people can do. And I think that that's a newer product that people are still just learning about or just figuring out. I speak often at conferences and different events, and was just at one this past weekend in New Orleans. And home sharing, I think a lot of people know, but then I say, you know, how many of you have ever heard of Airbnb experiences? And the hands are significantly fewer.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, I think there's an opportunity there. And so in that instance, I might say, we need to do more with, you know, X community or with X leader to ensure that people are knowing about Airbnb experiences, because, you know, quite frankly, you don't have to travel to do them. If you want to host one, you don't need a home to host one in. So if you're in a city where there are short-term rental regulations, but you still want to flex your entrepreneurial muscle, there's a way for you to do that through Airbnb experiences, and it doesn't cost you anything. It gives you an audience of millions of people that your product is showing up in front of. And it's an easy way, again, to start a business if you've had an idea about a business, or to really profile your business. And it's like free marketing. You know, it's free marketing to people who are traveling to your city or people who live in your city who want to see and do something different than what they're normally doing. They're not trying to go to the churches or sit at home on a weekend.
That's pretty powerful. Ms. Ingram, I want to thank you for coming on my show. You're amazing. Now, I know in the end here, this part of the conversation, I'd love to bring you back on the show to get in more detail, because at the first of the year, I always try to give people ways that they can start motivating and planning and seeing new opportunities. And that whole the Airbnb experiences, I think, is something that's not being spoken of a lot, because it's all about home sharing. That's where you cut your teeth. The brand has cut its teeth on that. But I know that through social media, through planning, that whole process that you're talking about is the next wave of great success with Airbnb. And the fact that you can come in and market and take advantage of an audience out there and expand your brand, we need to talk more about that. Will you come back?
I would love to come back. It's been a joy talking to you.
And you've been fantastic. And I love talking to you, because you took time to speak to Rashawn McDonald in your busy, 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 busy schedule.
Hi, this is Rashawn McDonald, the host of Money Making Conversation. You say to yourself, who calls Rashawn's show? Please welcome to Money Making Conversations, Lala Anthony. We met, you know, you used to always say, Rashawn, can you give me, can we talk? Can we talk?
I always talk to you about everything, everything. And looking at you and Steve Harvey, you know, that motivated me too, because I would see all the amazing things you guys were doing, and not just being on the radio. I felt like at that time, and even now, you know, people want to put people in boxes.
Please welcome to Money Making Conversations, the incredible Nick Cannon.
You're truly one of my mentors and one of the people that showed me that you can be multifaceted.
You know for a fact now that you're about to capture an audience that's going to have a spending power for at least another 20 years.
To me, it's like my happiness is invaluable. Money doesn't make you happy, but happy makes you money.
Money Making Conversations continues online at www.moneymakingconversations.com.
Hi, this is Sean McDonald. You're listening to Money Making Conversations. Money Making Conversations, my show.
Your show?
Yes. podcast.
You should.
Syndicated, yeah.
Okay.
Nationwide, you know, weekends, HBCU campuses, Sirius XM.
Wow, you
Spotify. I brought you on. I you know, I had to make sure that I'd elevated my game to the next level. And let me introduce this young friend. She's actually been in my Chicago apartment beating me up because I didn't make anything for her.
Hungry.
What you gonna make for me? Oh my God.
That's why you were making all the pies and you didn't make me.
Absolutely.
I couldn't even get a taste.
Yes.
How you have somebody come over to your house and they won't even let you taste?
She sat over there and watched me make all those pies.
That was crazy. Are you still making pies?
Absolutely. Come on now. That's why I'm going to Kelly Clarkson. I'll be doing it for her show today.
Are you serious?
Absolutely.
Can I come?
No, ma'am. My next guest is a graduate.
I'm going to carry your bag.
No, you won't. No, you won't.
Your pies?
You talk too much. My next guest is a graduate of the Goldman Sachs 10,000K Small Business Program for Entrepreneurs and an awardee of the Entrepreneurship Entrepreneur of the Year by the Living Legends Foundation, which I was happily there to see and was deeply moved and emotionally happy for her. Her company, BYOB, Be Your Own Brand,
right,
is a branding company that brands projects, products, and people with a three-step process that Sheila developed while being a marketing executive in the music business.
Exactly.
So I met her. I never met her. It was interesting when we'll talk about a relationship because people always knew about her in the music business, and then it was afterwards that we developed our relationship.
When I hounded you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And she's very good at it. BYOB is in its 10th year, and she owns the trademark for BYOB, which is important to know is Be Your Own Brand. Please welcome to Money Making Conversation, a good friend. I enjoy her from afar. I admire her, and I'm very appreciative that she's in the studio today. Please welcome Sheila Coates.
Ooh, is this being recorded? Because I need all of that. Friend, he admires, long time. All of those adjectives I've never heard you say before. I'm impressed. Because I'm in the studio.
Well, no, because you are special. And you know, you're an individual, and you carved a niche, a clear understanding of what branding is all about. I want to, before we even get started, because I was going through your resume, in Missouri City, Texas.
Yes.
I'm from Houston, Texas, so I'm very familiar with Missouri City, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you did the branding.
Of the city.
Of the city, Missouri City. So explain to everyone, and I want to start there.
Okay.
Because Missouri City, Texas is like a suburb of Houston. It's a very affluent community.
Very diverse community.
Very diverse community. It's 59 south of Houston. And when I read that, I went, wow, that's really, really cool. Let's talk through the process of how you get approached to, this is a city.
Right.
This is a major city here.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, a booming city. And how does that, how break down the steps of branding, showing leadership, and being able to get the word out?
Exactly. Well, you know, everything I think is about relationships. So I met the city manager coming in doing a leadership conference for him through a good friend of mine named Anita Castile. And Anthony, after I did the leadership conference, had so many of his key people, like his fire chief and his assistant manager and the person who ran his police department, say, you know, this is something new. We've never heard this before. We need to have her come back. They were in the process of trying to distinguish themselves from, what is it, Sugarland
next door. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So Sugarland gets a lot more notoriety, but they wanted to find out how people would know about them. And so my three-step process for branding their leadership team still is applicable for branding a city.
Right.
And so I said, well, what are you known for?
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, what do you want to be known for?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, what can you deliver?
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't answer those questions. Like, everybody has a mission statement, right? You go into these cities and they tell you, we want to be the place where you live and grow. But at the end of the day, when I come to your city, what do you want me to know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the logo. It's mm-hmm. not about a tagline. It's about the experience that I'm going to get when I go into Missouri City.
Right.
And that's when they realized they didn't have that.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about Missouri City, Texas, which is a suburb right outside of Houston, Texas.
Yes.
This is important because I grew up near Missouri City. It was kind of like a city that, you know, football power.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of like went from just a regular little small community to an actual city.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got pushed all the way to the 59 side of the freeway. It grew, it kind of like, it started growing and just blossoming. And you're right, Sugarland
but has always been Imperial Sugar. Mm-hmm. Always had that brand relationship, and right. and people knew exactly what it was. But Missouri City still was like, okay.
Yeah, we're just here. And they called themselves Mo City. You know, they had some bad reputation problems for a little bit, mm-hmm. but they're really a friendly city. And so when we decided to take on the branding, I did this whole concept with them that I do with people, but I put it for the city, and I had them tell me, what is it that they can deliver? And I had all of their key stakeholders involved. I had a lot of their employees involved, and I got back a lot of feedback. And right. then they realized that there were three things that they were known for. The key was, though, do you appreciate those three things?
Right.
Because you always think, I should be like Houston, or I should be more like Sugarland. But if I'm a person coming to the city, there are some things that I want to know about this city that I know I can get.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing because then I tested it.
Mm-hmm.
After they told me what their three attributes were, I went around the city to see. Mm-hmm. And I'm not joking. This was probably one of the friendliest cities I've ever been in.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So they told me they wanted to be known for their friendliness, for their ability to go above and beyond, mm-hmm. and for their ability to be a diverse family community, mm-hmm. right? So when they said these things, I said, well, then you got to be this. This is a true story. I got a ticket in Missouri City going 35 in a 30-mile zone. I was like, are you serious? You guys pulled me over.
Mm-hmm.
I got pulled over. I went through the process of paying for the ticket instead of calling the police chief, which I was thinking about doing since right. I had met him, because
mm-hmm.
I wanted to see how they operated in every little area of, you know, the city. So I go to this place to pay for the ticket. This lady couldn't be nicer.
Mm-hmm.
When I came in the door, she said, good morning. How are you? How can I help you? And I'm thinking, okay, this is definitely not L.A., right?
Right, right, right.
I come in. I was in the wrong building.
Or Houston, right down the road.
Or Houston, okay. Or Sugarland,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So she says to me, you're in the wrong place. But hold on a minute. Let me make a call for you, and then I'll find out exactly where you need to go. She calls the lady. She gives me the address. I was like, okay, maybe she knows I'm checking the mm-hmm. background of this
mm-hmm.
place.
Mm-hmm.
So sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the next place. Before I could get in, hi, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
I was told to ask for, oh, hold on, let me go get her for you.
Mm-hmm.
They were friendly. They went above and beyond. This is what they told me that they wanted. These ladies didn't know that I was the branding person, and I was checking to see if the information that they had shared with me
right.
was really what they did. It was dead on.
Mm-hmm.
So I do this whole thing. I go around a couple places. I go to some stores. I go, I'm checking, because I said, if you tell me this is who you are, I should feel this.
Right.
From mm-hmm. the people that are working in your city.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Long story short, I did that for like maybe a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
I pull all of the key stakeholders back together, and I give them the names and the places of the people who I had interacted with.
Mm.
You guys are this city. The thing was, the city manager says to me, well, is that anything great? I mean, like, should... I said, now, if I'm a person who's putting my family here, don't yes. I want a family-friendly
mm-hmm.
environment? Mm-hmm. So friendliness is important to me.
Right.
If I'm telling somebody that I have a diverse community and I'm a business who's looking for diversity,
mm-hmm.
this is the place I need to be. Once they realize that these are your attributes, let's start talking about them.
Right.
You can't
promote
just
them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So now in their community relations, when they do events,
mm-hmm.
they, you know, if you do a city event, promote that it's going to be a friendly event because you guys are going to be friendly.
Friendly,
promote
safe,
that it's going to be
and
safe
family.
Mm-hmm. and diverse.
Mm-hmm.
They got it.
Mm-hmm.
So now businesses can come there and realize, I can come here and it's going to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
I can come here and move my employees because it's going to be friendly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a family environment. It was so much fun to get them to see who they were, but more importantly, to get them to see you really are that.
Right.
So that's what I do when I do cities. I'm about to brand Volunteers of America, which is a huge organization.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but they're a nonprofit. There's right. thousands of nonprofits. Why am I going to give you money?
Right.
That's what I'm helping them down. Distinguish. What do you do that another nonprofit doesn't do?
Right.
And what's uniquely you? So that's what branding is all about, is giving you that identity, just like, you know, a Nike or anyone else. Everything is a brand.
Right.
It's the experience and the perception that you want people to have when they encounter you.
Yeah, it really has changed the game. I would tell people we're in the Muhammad Ali era. You know, people can just promote. They can talk. They can scream. They can shout immediately because of social media. Where that branding was left to corporations back in the day who advertised on the radio right. and TV and commercials and digital and things like that because of social media. Now, you're part of the cure as part of the problem.
Yeah, but I love the fact that you use Muhammad Ali. I use him a lot because I say I am, and it's not just me, but it's scientifically proven that the words I am,
mm-hmm.
whatever you follow that with, you become. Whether you're a Christian, scientific, whatever, you become what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I am is so important. Muhammad Ali was the first to say, I am what? The greatest.
The greatest.
Mm-hmm. He told you that from day one. Mm-hmm. I am the greatest. I'm the greatest looking. I'm the greatest fighter. Mm-hmm. I'm the greatest dresser. When he died, what did they call him? The GOAT.
Greatest. Mm-hmm.
Greatest, the greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the power of understanding I am in mm-hmm. your brand. Mm-hmm. You become what you believe. And that's why I say to young kids, you tell yourself, you know, I am badass, so-and-so, whatever. You know, you become that. You mm-hmm. start to embody that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to act like that.
Mm-hmm.
When Muhammad Ali said that, it wasn't about even branding himself mm-hmm. as much as he was making a point. But in all of the time that he said that,
right,
they ended up calling him that. And that's the power of knowing the I am.
Right.
Yeah.
Telling yourself, great. Thank you for coming on my show, Money Making Conversation.
Thank you. You know, I could talk to you all day.
Well, in fact, you know, we got
to. You can take me to lunch if you want. We can keep.
Well, I got to catch an airplane. I got to go to the airport, catch a plane, because I got to go to L.A., because, you know, I'm busy like that.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, we have to do this every quarter.
I would love to.
It's part of the brand. It's part of the process that I want to. I'm at a good place in my life now where I can be able to say this is what I want to be able to communicate to my listeners and to my fan base on a regular basis. And you are a star.
Well, thank you. And it, hopefully it'll help them. That's really my goal,
well,
get people to understand.
You help me.
We're all unique.
You help me. And I think I feel that's an important part of it because you constantly educate me every time I communicate with you. And I always feel that that's the key to my success. I'm willing mm-hmm. to take on new information, and you got to keep winning, and you got to keep being Sheila.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do nothing but.
It's Money Making Conversation, everybody. We'll be back next week. Follow us. Money Making Conversations on social. Got all the social website.com. Find out who's on moneymakingconversation.com. Again, Rashawn McDonald. Have a great year, great life. I will always be there thinking about you.
Hi, this is Rashawn McDonald, the host of Money Making Conversation. You say to yourself, who calls Rashawn's show? Please welcome to Money Making Conversations, Lala Anthony. We met, you know, used to always say, Rashawn.
Yes.
Can we talk?
I always talk to you about everything, everything. And looking at you and Steve Harvey, you know, that motivated me too, because I would see all the amazing things you guys were doing and not just being on the radio. I mm-hmm. felt like at that time and even now, you mm-hmm. know, people want to put people in boxes.
Please welcome to Money Making Conversations, the incredible Nick Cannon.
You're truly one of my mentors and one of the people that showed me that you can be multifaceted.
You know for a fact now that you about to capture an audience that's going to have a spending power for at least another 20 years.
To me, it's like my happiness is invaluable. Money doesn't make you happy, but happy makes you money.
Money Making Conversations continues online at www.moneymakingconversations.com. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time you stop thinking about your dreams and put some plans into action.